The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Taking Stock on Friday, the 30th of June, 2023. It's a roundup of today's business news, investment views, including today's indices, winners and losers, most read RNSs, plus John Mayer on the clear skies in China, deleveraging the portfolio, and also talks about Atlantic Lithium, Blue Jay Mining, and Codal Minerals. Plus, Russ Mould on bond prices, interest rates, and the inversion of the yield curve. Let's start off with the indices. It's pretty much a green day, but it's been a horrible, horrible week and a terrible first half. FTSE 100, by the way, is up 0.72% to 7525. FTSE 250 up 0.61% to 18,381. And even the FTSE All Share AIM Index is up a smidge at 0.18% at 752, not far off its lows though, which is 751. By the way, we are on the last day of Q2 and H1 of 2023, so let's check out the 6 month performances of the indices. FTSE 100 up 0.13%. FTSE 250 has been down for 6 months by 2.6%, and the FTSE AIM All Share 6 month performance down 9.5%. One notable bit of news on the bond market: the government UK 2 year bond yield has hit a new high at 5.295%. Go back to 2021, it was pretty much at zero. Okay, top three business stories. At three, promising growth in British car production could be cut short unless a deal is reached with the European Union in the coming months, an industry body has warned. Britain recorded the best May for car production in 4 years, according to data from the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders. However, of the exports, more than half, 56% of the cars were made for Europe, with less than a third, or 28%, of exports were going to the next largest markets, the United States, China, Japan, and Australia. At two, the number of mortgage applications has not declined, despite interest rates rising to the highest level in 15 years, Nationwide has said. The Building Society said the sharp increase in borrowing costs was likely, though, to cause a significant drag on activity in the housing market. Nationwide's latest data revealed house prices dropped by 3.5% in the year to June, the largest fall since 2009. And we all know what happened in 2009. And on one, energy bills are likely to stay high for the foreseeable future, according to the boss of the company that owns British Gas. Centrica chief Chris O'Shea said while he believes the worst of the energy crisis is over, risks remain. A new price cap comes into effect this weekend, which will see households with typical energy uses pay £2,074. Okay, winners and losers. Let's start off with the losers first. There's two companies pretty much on 51% drops today. And that is TrackWise and Crops, and both for the sort of same reason. But TrackWise is delay of results and suspension, so they're also on a trading update. But the company now expects to publish its 2022 annual report during July 2023. According to the trading in the company's ordinary shares, on AIM will be suspended with effect from 7:30 a.m. on the 3rd of July, pending publication of this report. They say the company expects to report full-year revenues of £7.52 million. This is down from £8.01 million, and adjusted operating loss of approximately £2.95 million. The loss before taxation is expected to be £7.74 million. They say net debt as of the 31st December was £9.34 million. This is prior to the receipt of the placing, subscription and open offer and net proceeds of the equity fundraise, which completed in the 2023 financial year, and it was approximately £4.75 million. Our biggest riser today, Renalytics, RENX is ticker there. FDA approves Kidney Intel X. The US Food and Drug Administration has granted de novo marketing authorization for its Kidney Intel X.DKD-TM prognostic test, I should say. This affirms that Kidney Intel X as a first-in-class artificial intelligence-enabled prognostic testing platform to guide care management for adults with type 2 diabetes and early-stage chronic kidney disease. Renalytics believe FDA authorization will lead to increasing test adoption, informing clinical guidelines, expanding insurance coverage, and pursuing additional international regulatory approvals. It's up by about 50% today. And finally, the most read RNS of the day comes from Codal Minerals. It's extension of long stop date for Begoni funding. Begoni Lithium Project funding package, a further extension of the long stop date, is extended to the 31st of August 2023. And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. All right, John?
Yes, good, thank you.
Yes, well, do you know what? The markets have been very hard. We are now at the end of quarter two, and it's not been a very nice year so far for many stocks, including resource stocks. And I suppose that's linked to China and everything. And in fact, in your morning note, isn't it? Didn't one of you guys say the skies in China are looking clearer? Is that right?
Well, unusually clear, because you used not to be able to see certain Chinese cities from the sky, and now the factory activity is lower than it was. I guess they're a bit greener than they used to be as well.
I was going to say, is there a mixture of both? I mean, is it because they're going greener, or is this because of lack of activity?
I think it's maybe more a lack of activity in that they're just not creating the pollution that they were creating before. Mm. I mean, there will be some progress as they transform their economy towards high-tech industries. But there's no lack of burning coal in coal-fired power stations, which is one of the big pollutants. But perhaps they are doing less in terms of burning coal in stoves and maybe wood in stoves. One way or another, the air quality is getting better, but it is definitely seen as an economic indicator. And we are seeing that, unfortunately, in commodity markets, in that China is not buying a lot of commodities right now.
Yeah. Well, and you were just telling me about a little anecdote, a joke, or maybe an anecdote, whatever it was, about when a pilot was asked what Beijing looks like from the air.
That's right, and he had to say he didn't know, he'd never been able to see it.
Yeah, that's quite worrying, really, isn't it? But, okay, and something else, you mentioned there, in the note there, deleveraging of the portfolio, and you think this has hit the market a little bit. Explain this, this phenomenon.
So what we've heard is that certain institutions have been asking their clients to deleverage and just reducing the amount of money they lend into these leveraged portfolios. Now, I'm not sure if this is spread across private individuals or if this is applying to broader funds, but we have seen this before. We certainly saw it in 2008 when the market collapsed and Lehman Brothers was going down. And we just wonder if a bit of this is going on at the moment. So there are reports of it in the market. Difficult to prove.
What do you mean leverage funds? Explain that. Me, this is what I do. I've got Barclays stockbrokers. I literally, there's money in the account. If there is money in the account, I buy some shares. So what's different here? What are people doing? You mean what are they doing?
Well, that would be one source of leverage. But certainly, if you open an account in Switzerland, for example, they will then offer to, let's say you have £100,000 worth of stock, mm-hmm. they'll then offer to lend you a proportion of that stock value so that you can carry on punting in the marketplace. And of course, if that portfolio goes down, then they'll say, well, you can't have so much, you have to pay some of the cash back. Mm-hmm. If the value portfolio goes up, they then phone you up and offer you more cash to carry on investing in the market. So this is what causes leverage and deleverage. I'm not a big fan of it myself, and it's difficult to know how much of this actually applies to UK small caps. But this is what goes on, and this is why when we see markets in distress, you always see an element of deleveraging.
Yeah. It's slightly worrying, isn't it? Because you realise it accelerates losses going down, and if people's losses accelerate, they just start selling wholesale, which encourages more people to sell, essentially, because the markets are falling. Why are you selling? Because other people are, and then it exacerbates the fall and the drop, doesn't it? But you get to a stage where almost the sellers are out, and, you know, shorts are covered and all that stuff, and you have, eventually, hopefully, you have a big bounce, technical bounce, you know, from the bottom. And in fact, I've said this so many times, but the AIM All Share Index, it literally is oversold to the point where it's at a level where it's only happened 5 times in the last 10 years, where the relative strength index is 14 in the week. It's gone down 7 days in a trot, FTSE 250, 10 days in a trot. You know, we are back below the lows of October in AIM All Share. So it is oversold. You're thinking, is this happening? Because, you know, I've seen many stocks, and that's why in this market, it's a bit worrying holding a stock that's going against you, never average down in a bear market. I won't anyway, because it's okay averaging down in a bull market where everything's rising, because you are buying the dip. You're not buying the dip in a bear market. You are buying a downtrend, and that can continue for longer than you'd expect it to. And longer than reasonable, it's logical. It's almost like, you know, so keep going down. You think, what the heck is going on there? It's below sort of its asset value. It's below, you know, it's a very good value, but it'll keep going down because you get, I suppose, that plays into it a little bit. These people are selling because they are leveraged in some way, or institutions. And you've got fund managers, of course, have to reduce their weight in stocks if private investors are selling. So it's like a vicious spiral, isn't it? It carries on, you know?
It is a vicious spiral, and it's very unfortunate for the people who deleveraged, and usually that is the more aggressive investment funds. But it does provide great opportunities for new investors to come in, and we saw this in 2008. And
yeah,
a lot of investors made multiple gains between 2008, 2009. And that I think has helped to expand the sort of the whole investor base of small caps in the UK. So our market is much more like Canada and Australia these days in terms of the broad range of interest, certainly in mining shares. And when we get these falls where investment funds are stopped out, and they sell their good stocks more than the bad ones, because they have to find liquidity to sell into. And this is what we look out for. And so, you know, yesterday we were looking at Atlantic Lithium, for example. The stock fell 18% at one point. We thought, this is crazy. They've actually put out something that looks like quite good news. This was a definitive feasibility study on their lithium project in Ghana. I thought, why is the market treating it this way? And the only explanation we can really come up with is that there was forced selling and there was liquidity in the market. So, yeah, I mean, there were one or two things you could pick on to say, a couple of points in the feasibility study that weren't quite so positive. The CapEx had gone up, but it hadn't gone up that much, and it had gone up for a very good reason, because they were putting in a dense media separation plant to accelerate the move into production and cash flow. And the recovery rates off a dense media separation plant are always a little bit lower. But the material that they don't recover from the DMS plant, they will recover it later on a float plant. Now, okay, you need to be a bit of an expert to know that in this case. And we do have the benefit of having visited the site quite recently in Ghana. But it was a good study, and there was the stock certainly didn't deserve to be sold off in that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had Neil on, and he said that. He explained, you know, that that the costs got up a bit, but that's, you know, you can expect that. But the fundamentals are still very good. And in fact, I think EBITDA improved. So they're looking at around average life of mine, I'm reading here, $316 million per annum, you know, so, and payback of 19 months. So those economics are very good, aren't they, you know?
Well, if you applied spot prices to the mine right now, you'd probably be paying back in about 4 or 5 months. So,
yeah, well, you said that. He said that they've modelled this on, I think, is it $1,500, I think, for lithium? Now it's at 4,000, so, or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, if it did, like, it's 3 times as good if you look at the current prices, you know.
Yes, they modelled it at 1587, so... Yeah, you're a long way off current prices. Now, yes, we do expect current prices to pull back a bit more, but possibly not to them, their model's assumption. And we know there is huge interest in the world at the moment. Somebody I was talking to the other day said that they'd been offered, a trader had offered them a $75 million check in their account tomorrow if they agreed to an offtake agreement on half their lithium. So it's very easy to fund these projects. I mean, yeah. Atlantic Lithium does not need to come to the market for cash. I mean, I'm not saying it won't, but it certainly doesn't need to. Mm. You know, they've got Piedmont. Piedmont are not going to give up that project. I think the only...
That's also what Neil pointed out. So you have to understand, a lot of these costs are footed by Piedmont. You know, it's not them. So, yeah. So that's interesting, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, I mean, investors shouldn't... I mean, this is a stock I would be buying. But it seems that there must have been some leverage money, I think, in the market, and if that leverage money comes out, that's an opportunity for everybody else.
Yeah. Okay. Blue Jay. We're just looking at this. I just looked at the chart of this and thinking, and I looked at is that right? I looked at the market cap and it's like 20 million. And I'm sure, like I said, this was like a darling stock at one time when it peaked out, went out at 1.8 pence a share. Back in March 2018, it was 26 pence a share. And I was saying, yeah, this is like a triple-digit market cap, wasn't it, beforehand? So it's one of the stocks and resource companies that's taken a hammering, you know?
It has, but it's been a long, slow decline, this one. And it's a bit of a shame because the projects are all there. They have a joint venture with Cobalt Metals, but Cobalt, who are supposed to be using artificial intelligence, are just using normal intelligence to drill out a copper project in Zambia that was already found by somebody else. So nothing particularly AI focused on that from what I can see, but maybe they'll be ringing me up afterwards and telling me something I don't know, because they are supposed to be drilling the Disco project in Greenland, and they just don't seem to be doing it right now. Perhaps they will next year. So in the meantime, Blue Jay have raised a little bit more money, £1.3 million. They're going to focus that on the Hammerslati project. They own 100% of that. They've been getting very good looking sulfide mineralization from recent drilling. We don't know what the results of that is, but they seem excited enough to want to focus on it going forward. So fingers crossed. They were looking at going to this other project in Greenland called Kangerlussuaq. And that is suspended. They apparently there's quite a lot of sea ice in that area, so they've decided to leave that be for a little while. They don't want to have to fight with the sea ice to get into the fields to get the drill rigs in, because everything, you know, things in Greenland are just slightly complicated by the weather. And of course, in the meantime, they're working on the feasibility study for the Dundas ilmenite project as well. So it seems to be going painfully slowly. So that's something I will have to catch up with them on and say, well, come on, guys, where is this? What's going on? Yeah. We always thought this was sensible quality ilmenite and they have a offtake agreement for 60% of the material to go into Asia. So what's happening here? Mm. So questions to answer, but still lots going on.
What do you know about corn, John? Anything? I just noticed that I just had an alert the other day, but corn futures just dropped off a cliff there. I don't know why that is. Is it an oversupply of corn somewhere now? I have no idea. Just looking through charts of the commodities, and I stumbled on corn, which just gapped down the other day massively. I have no idea why, but...
I was asking about food inflation the other day, and I was asking around people in the agricultural industry, and I was told that corn prices hadn't actually gone up anything at all, despite Ukraine. And I asked somebody who knows an egg producer, and apparently this egg producer says that egg prices haven't gone up. So, well, what are the supermarkets working on? Why have our prices gone up so much?
Yeah.
Is this all complete rubbish, or is there real inflation in there? I mean, I know we had logistical issues for a while, not enough truck drivers and things like that, but surely we're over all that by now.
Yeah. Okay, because apparently, I'm saying grain and soybean futures tumbled on Wednesday. Soybean futures led the decline, shedding more than 2% on extended forecasts for much-needed rains, bringing relief to drought-stressed crops in the U.S. Midwest. So it looks like better weather or more conducive weather to growing crops is around the corner. There we are. So... it's interesting. Well, it depends on your outlook. Okay, and next one, Kodal. It's done well of late, isn't it, Kodal? But what's happened with...
Well, Kodal had a fantastic run on the back of this deal.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a hit.
I hope it was your bank, your profits there, John. Have you got any stock?
Oh, I wish I had. I sold out of it some time ago. I never expected the deal with Hainan Mining to come along. I thought it was doing quite well as it was, and then the stock doubled on the news of Hainan Mining. It didn't quite double overnight, but it did well. And Hainan Mining are working with the management of Kodal to complete the deal and get. And I believe the money. They've got the money ready to come over, but of course. When there's any deal like this, you have to have approvals from the local government, the government in Mali, and approvals from the stock exchange or whoever over here, and they have to set up new bank accounts and create a new structure for the joint venture, and that's all happening. But unfortunately, in Mali, the Minister of Mines, Mr. Walter Lamine Sidhu Traore. He's unexpectedly resigned because of a lack of electricity. Now, in Mali, they've been... Yeah, it's not a good thing to sell electricity below the price of actually producing it, but that's what they've been doing. I guess because the coal price went up a lot. They recently, last year, turned on a new hydropower plant, so I guess maybe that's taken some time to commission. But the Minister of Mines and Energy has suddenly left his post, and he's not there to sign the new this deal with Hainan Mining, unfortunately. So it needs the minister's approval. There is a new temporary minister, but I guess he's catching up with the paperwork in the intray, and that means that Kodal Minerals have had to extend what they call the long stop date on the joint venture agreement till the end of August, which is frustrating. But that's the reason for it.
I thought you meant when he resigned due to lack of electricity because he's in his office and he says, I can't work in the dark. This is ridiculous. I can't. Can someone bring a candle in or something? No, I'm resigning, that's it. So I see in January 19th, that's when it started rising. It was literally at 0.23 pence. That was in January. It shot up on that major funding package there. And then almost doubled. Then went sideways for a while till April, and then shot up again, double there. It went from, so it's gone from 0.23 pence up to 0.9 pence in April, and now it's halved back to 0.46 pence pretty much. So, hold on to your tin hats there, guys. So I hope you took a bit of profit, took a bit off the table there if you've managed to capture that upside. But that is quite a volatile up and down there. It's a roller coaster ride there.
Well, there's no shortage of demand for lithium. The guys who are trying to produce lithium from lithium brines in Argentina are still appear to be struggling with the technology. So hard rock is where it's at. That's where we've placed our bets into hard rock lithium mineral companies. Yes, the spodumene guys.
Yeah.
Got lots of spodumene rocks around our office.
We're the spodumene guys. Yeah, okay. Clean, mean, spodumene guys. All right, yeah. So Atlantic Lithium spodumene, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Kodal, Atlantic, Savannah Resources. They're not enough of them around, frankly.
Not enough of the spodumene guys around.
It's easy to find pegmatite with some lithium in it. Well, it's easy to find pegmatites. It's harder to find pegmatites with lithium, and it's much, much harder to find lithium-bearing pegmatites with sufficient grade to make it economic on a longer-term basis. So that's the key, is finding good quality pegmatites with the right sort of lithium, without the wrong sort of impurities. You don't want to have too much mica in there. You don't really want to be buying into lepidolite because it's quite micaceous. And that is a little bit of a problem for the furnaces. They are actually processing lepidolite in China, but they don't really want to do it. They're only processing it because they can't buy the better quality stuff at the moment. So as more and more people discover more of these better quality lithium pegmatites and spodumenes, then prices will naturally come down. But at the moment, the demand for opening for new material for new gigafactories is so great. We hear the traders are just desperate to buy it.
Yeah. It's almost like you're speaking a different language there, John. But
it feels like it.
But I'm learning the language. So all I know is at the moment, spodumene is the spodumene guys is what you're looking at. Pegmatite, a bit more tricky. Not quite there yet.
Yes.
Okay. Marvelous stuff, John. I learn every week, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you, Justin.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Yeah, very well, Justin. How are you, mate? You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Are you all flushed from last week from Ascot? I saw a picture of you and your very good wife, I think it was.
Well, yes, I made a loan to the bookmakers on Wednesday and clawed it back on Thursday. So that was all very satisfactory.
Oh, okay.
So, and a good time was had by all. So.
And was there any signs of the cost of living squeeze there at Ascot?
No. Well, in terms of inflation and higher prices, yes.
Was there?
I can definitely confirm that. But were people enjoying and whooping it up? Yeah, very, very much so. I think the crowds did. I think reading my racing post, I think they did say that the crowds were a little bit down year on year. That may have been. And certainly the Royal Ascot emails were saying that there was badge availability for the Royal Enclosure quite close to the start of the meeting, which is unusual.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to remember how much a badge was. I think it's about £150 a day for the Royal Enclosure, which is not an insignificant amount of money. And then you've got to get there, have a bit to eat and drink, and then hope that the bookie chappies help fund a little bit of it. But so it's I was glad to get the loan back on Thursday. But yes, I think I haven't looked at the numbers scientifically, but I think the crowds were down a little bit. Yes. Yeah. So I think there is, but as you say, it's not a bad barometer in terms of, how flush people are feeling. And if, a jolly up at the races is not a cheap day out. And that's before you, if you feel inclined to have a little flutter.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying the Royal Enclosure is empty. Maybe the Charles and all that can afford it because they lost a bit of money last
year. Yeah, well, they limit the crowd. Yeah, they limit the crowd in the Royal Enclosure to about 10,000 now. It used to be nearer 12, I think. So they're trying to make it a little bit more
exclusive by 2,000 people. Yeah,
spacious is the word I'm looking for. Yeah. But I think on the first day the crowd's normally 45 to 50, between 40 and 50,000, and on the Thursday, which is Ladies' Day and Gold Cup Day, and the Saturday, the crowd gets nearer 80, I believe.
Wow, yeah.
1,000.
I don't know what it was. I did see something like that. I mean, talking about the Royals and their spending. I think it was like a sovereign has grant wasn't increased, but didn't they? The public spending, public money has gone up by 5%, apparently. They spend a lot of money there. So anyway, that's a Royal link. But let's talk about the markets, and let's start off then with interest rates. Because I know you saw the central bankers all gathered. I don't know where it was. Was it Portugal?
Sintra in Portugal.
Ah, that's right. Yeah.
Tough life.
Yeah, it's almost that they all got together beforehand to say, let's be really bearish here, to say we're not going to let up on interest rates and scare people maybe into stopping spending, because that'll help us in some way. Because they're all sort of singing from the same hymn sheet, weren't they?
They are. They were very much, Governor Bailey of the Bank of England and President Lagarde of the European Central Bank and Chair Powell of the US Federal Reserve all said the same thing. Rates could go higher for expected and stay there for longer than expected. And Powell, I think, was the last one to speak. And he actually said that he doesn't see US inflation retreating to the core sort of 2% target range until 2025, which potentially kind of implies that might not be until we start getting the first sniff of Fed rate cuts. And now the market has just yawned at that. It's still pricing in US interest rates of, 4.5% by the end of next year. Now, that's still a lot higher than it would have been, say, 6 months ago. But they're still pricing in rate cuts for 2024. I think the same in the UK and even to a degree in Europe. So the markets are sort of looking at that going, not entirely sure we believe you.
Yeah.
But, central bankers, as you say, are talking a much tougher game. And you can see that. I mean, the FTSE 100 is now down, it flirted with 8,000. It's now down to, 7,400. I know the NASDAQ, I think, has just had its best first half since the 1980s, sometime in the early 1980s. So that's just shrugged it off. But the FTSE 100 hasn't shrugged it off quite so much. I think the NASDAQ's obviously benefiting from artificial intelligence and tech hoopla. The UK doesn't have an awful lot of that in evidence. And what the UK does have, it has buckets of interest rate sensitive stocks and bond proxies in it. So it's got lots and lots of banks, insurers, utilities, real estate stocks, and also the UK has not been helped by the fact that the oil price has been weak and commodity prices haven't been particularly strong. So that's weighing on the miners and the oils who are big contributors, and the financials are very substantial contributors to earnings and dividends, and also particularly to earnings and dividend growth forecasts, which is well worth bearing in mind. And then you've got the political angle of Chancellor Hunt and public and political pressure on banks' margins, saying, look, you've got to cut people some slack on their mortgages, you've got to cut savers some slack and give them higher interest rates. So it does feel as if bank net interest margins, if not at peak, are jolly, jolly close there too. And there's a possibility that, you know, bad loan impairments will start to rise. Well, the banks have flagged that net interest margins won't rise much this year and that loan impairments will start to normalise. Under those circumstances, they still look capable of generating a bit of earnings growth potentially, but also certainly because of their strong capital positions, plenty of cash and therefore dividends. But the Bank of England's big U-turn, big fail that inflation will be transitory, is taking its toll on some of these financial stocks. And the other ones that are potentially in the firing line there, I use the word bond proxies, and I'm happy to explain that. The utilities, and it's been a busy week for utilities anyway, because of Thames Water, which isn't quoted, but you know, it's clearly got people thinking about the quoted water companies like Severn Trent and United Utilities.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? It's odd, isn't it? The indices. I mean, you, like I said, NASDAQ, I think, is up 33% from its low. So it's in a technical bull market. Whereas AMOL share, looking at this side, the smaller cap indices over here, is at a new low. It broke down from its October lows recently. It's had 7 days down in a row. FTSE 250 had 10 days down in a row. That is so rare. It doesn't happen very often. I mean, looking back even on the AMOL share, the what's called a relative strength index, and I pointed this out to a couple of people, I said, it went down to 14. It's only done that 5 times in the last 10 years. So it's really the tale of two, you know, countries. And this artificial intelligence, I say this like a contrarian believer, because I think where would I prefer to put my money now, it wouldn't be in the artificial intelligence or artificial value that's being created in the US, because you've got a $3 trillion market cap at Apple. How much higher can that go in the next 6-12 months? And if you look over here, there are some great little companies. I mean, there's a lot of rubbish on AIM, but there's some great little companies there that are good value. And in FTSE 250 companies as well are good value.
I was going to say, I think there's some value in the FTSE 100, quite frankly. Yeah, yeah. But at the moment, I feel like, you know, to quote Alistair Mundy, who used to run one of the, you know, well, he's now, you know, 91, but in Investec, you know, sort of small cap, mid cap value funds, you know, he used to describe value investing as being like sat in a restaurant on your own eating dinner on Valentine's night. And in a lot of cases, I know exactly how he feels right now, because You just feel like you're talking to yourself. I mean, unless you're talking about AI or NVIDIA. And as you say, and the S&P is fascinating. It's basically all of its gains this year have come from 7 stocks. The other 493 have done nothing, which intuitively makes you feel uncomfortable. I think the thing is that this does, to a degree, and I don't want to sound like Dr. Dinosaur here, does reflect a major shift in market dynamics and structure from when I started in 1991. And this isn't to denigrate them or knock them. They're an important part of the market and they serve an important function. But passive funds introduce a fair degree of reflexivity into the market.
Yeah.
The higher something goes, the more the index buyers have to have.
Yeah.
And the higher it goes, and therefore the more the index buyers have to have. So what you're almost waiting for is that what's going to, when it changes, that reflexivity will work incredibly negatively, as we saw last year. I mean, Tesla was down 70% at one stage last year, right? And so it's one of those things, if and when it turns, and I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't expect them to get where they are now, so you're talking to the wrong person if you're looking for a forecast as to when they will turn or whatever. I think you'll find that the turn will be incredibly quick as well, just like it was in 2022. I personally find it quite hard to justify Apple having a market cap that's bigger than UK GDP, for all of the fact that Apple is a wonderful company and it does, and it brings an awful lot of productivity benefits and pleasure to a heck of a lot of people. It's got a lot of, you know, loyal customers because of the app ecosystem and the quality of the service that it provides. But it just intuitively, it just smacks of those glory days of the 1980s when, you know, the real estate in central Tokyo's in the Imperial Palace was worth more than the real estate of the entirety of California. It just feels like one of those stats that just doesn't sit right. It was like when Zoom video communications market cap was more than the entire UK real estate sector, because the market convinced itself nobody was ever going back to work and there'd be no need for any commercial buildings ever again. Cobblers, you know. So I think those numbers deep down do make me sit and think. But by the same token, unless these firms start coughing up profit warnings or something really, you know, or something really unexpected happens on a more wider basis, that reflexivity, you know, could well keep them going. But I would be very wary of what happens when it kicks into reverse and the market cap starts to decline, the index weighting starts to decline, and the passives start to sell, because that will gear it up on the downside as well. And I think that's something that we just need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the old saying, buy low, sell high. You know, I mean, there are people pushing, this, you know, the index funds are pushing these up, and they say they reweight and reflect the rises.
Yep.
But then if that starts petering out and things start falling, you get a bit of a trouble there. And as I said, now you're seeing, I did tweet out the difference between NASDAQ and the AIM All Share, and people thought I was being very bearish on the AIM All Share. No, contrarian, I was thinking, no, the bargains are on the all-in share. If you want to earn money now, you know, you look for good companies that have been hammered just through sentiment. You don't touch the Apples and all that because they've already risen. The time to get into those, or Teslas, was like, 6 months ago, a year ago. That's too late now. They've made their move.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. I think that, you know, I always spend more of my time looking at chart, and I know I leave the charts to you. But I'm intuitively more interested in charts that go top left to bottom right than the other way around, because that's where I think there might be some value. And, you know, if we'd have been, you know, look at this week, you know, H&M, the Swedish stock, up 18% yesterday. Next has come up with better than expected numbers. The retailers have had a fantastic run this year. If there was one sector you were going to write off as a duff one last autumn, what was it going to be? It was going to be retail, right? Mm-hmm. Inflation, interest rates, mortgages, energy bills, you name it. Picture couldn't have got worse. Okay, government then stepped in with some energy subsidies and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But retail stocks have actually had a fantastic run. So where right now is sentiment really, really bearish? I actually think commercial real estate is one. I think the oil is potentially another. And there, and to a degree, financials. I'm not saying they're all going to start performing on a dime, because I don't think they are. Or house builders, I think it's going to be, you need to find the ones with the decent balance sheets that will see you through. But at some stage, we know that rates are going to come down, and we know that the economy is going to get a little bit more traction. And at some stage, that's the sort of stock that would really lean into that. And they won't wait for it. Again, as soon as they sense that peak in interest rates coming, that's when they'll move. They won't wait for rates to actually start going down. So maybe it's going to take a year longer. Mm-hmm. And I admit, at the moment, in this passive world, this AI world, people can be very, very impatient. But I think, you know, easing your way into these things for the brave and the patient might not. You certainly start doing your research anyway, put it that way, because I think time is going to be on your side. I don't think there's going to be loads going on over the summer to make the move. As you say, central bankers are talking tough, so there's going to be very little relief in that respect. But they're the sort of places at the moment nobody's asking about. No, the only questions I got on retail 9 months ago were negative ones. Mm. I'm not getting anything positive on commercial real estate, oils, banks. So again, intriguingly for me, they're the ones that I'd be doing my research on very patiently.
Yeah, yeah. Well, things have been hammered and then back to their lows pretty much are some of the house builders. And I think there's some great businesses there. And I'm looking at Taylor Wimpey and a smaller one is MJ Gleeson. In fact, Gleeson just sold.
Gleeson sold an asset today, and so has Barrett. So again, you see, they're just running the business really carefully, making sure there's plenty of cash. They're not going into a downturn with debt like they did in certainly Barrett's case in 2007. They're going to come through this and they'll be primed and ready to go when things turn, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, McLeason's down from 9.50 to, what are they down to?
Three odd.
Yeah, three
odd. Yeah, three odd now, I think. So,
and yet they've got cash, they're a profitable company, they're at lows all the time. The downturn is priced in. It's been, you know, it was £9 back in July 2021. And it's retesting a low of October now. But I keep reverting back to that yield, the bond, the inversion of the bond yield curve, you know? And I'm thinking, now, that's even retesting its low. So it went down to sort of, 0.0187, minus 0.1. And now it rallied back up to 0.4. Now it's gone back to 1% now again. And I'm thinking, look at how accurate a predictor that was. It's predicted the last 10 recessions. Now, it takes anything from a year to 2 years for the recession to kick in. Now, the market is sort of pricing the recession in, apart from the Magnificent Seven. And I'm thinking, okay, if it does happen, will the central banks still hold interest rates high? Because if you've got really slow growth, if prices are coming down, and I think it's like a super tanker. Once they start coming down very quickly and you get slower growth and people lay people off and all that stuff and people spend left, you've got this, you know, vicious cycle that will carry on with prices keep going. And remember before we were talking about inflation when no one was, and you said inflation is something to look at because it's not happening and no one's even thinking about it. Now, part of me thinking, what about deflation then? No one's even saying that, or not a lot of people. There are some people saying it, but that could play out, couldn't it? And that's the worry.
That would be the biggest shock, right? I think one or two people are sort of mudging around the stagflation issue, but nobody's talking about deflation now. So again, if you're looking for a left field shock, well, there you go. That's definitely one. And you know, we know that's, and well, that's when, if you believe that, for example, then UK bonds have a look at, you know, that would, people will be thinking, oh, I can get 5% on UK 2-year treasuries, UK 2-year gilts, yeah, right now, and 4 and a bit percent on.
I just looked at, I just punched that on Twitter saying it's literally, it's gone from zero in June 2021 to 5.29% now today. Yeah. It's like, wow, that's phenomenal.
So again, if you're looking for another reason why the FTSE 100 is paddling sideways like a wounded duck, you know, that's offering a yield of 4.1% this year, with, yes, capital appreciation potential, but capital risk. Mm-hmm. 2-year treasury, 5.1% nominal yield. To 2-year gilt, I mean, I'm not, you know, you can sort of understand why all, you know, what's the UK 10-year yield, about 4.3? So again, you can understand why the FTSE 100 is finding it tougher going. I know that there's a yield of 4.1, there's then another 1.9% on top from buybacks, but that's a bit tough for retail investors to always fully participate in. Mm. So you can argue the cash yield on the FTSE 100 is 6, still outstripping gilts, but gilts, you know, your principal is going to be safe, or we've got to keep an eye on inflation on both fronts. But you can understand why people will be at least thinking, you know, nudge my fixed income allocation up potentially. And again, if anybody thinks the left field deflation thing is coming and central banks panic and go back to QE, heavens above, people will be looking at 5% 2-year yields and 4.5% 10-year yields as one of the opportunities of the decade, just like buying Austrian bonds for 100 years at 0. Whatever it was, present was one of the stupidest things people have ever done. So again, we're not getting quite to that ridiculous extreme of people taking you for a ride by selling you 100 year bonds, but you can, there might be time to look back and think, actually, I wish I'd had a few more of those, because that really, you know, even allowing for inflation, you know, at the moment you might think, yeah, that's probably worth a bit of a balancing up just in case, because, you know, bonds have had an absolute thrashing over the last couple of years, whereas equities have hung in pretty tough. And in the case of AI and tech and hoopla land, they've obviously done brilliantly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's central bank saying one thing, the market is saying something else. And
Market is saying everything's going to be fine. The commodity markets and oil prices are saying that there's a massive recession coming. The bond market's telling there's a recession coming. Yeah. Somebody's going to be wrong.
Yeah. Well, I think commodities and bond prices are quite accurate. The inversion of the yield curve, it's been right on the last 10 recessions. That's quite a good track record, you know? To a certain extent, you know, what the central banks are saying is a bit political, isn't it? They have to send a certain message out there. It doesn't mean it's accurate, you know?
Yeah, and they're human. They're going to get things wrong. Yeah. I mean, I've had loads of practice, and they've just proved it in the last 2 years. They've made a muck of it. You know, they, with this transit, they just got it flat wrong. That's it. Mm. End of. There's no other discussion to be had. Now it's how can they try and fix it? And human nature being what it is, they'll probably overcompensate on the other way. And as we know, Fed rate cycles generally end when either there's a recession or a market downturn or both.
Yeah. Cool. Sit back and luckily I've still got some, you know, a decent amount of cash in the portfolio. I just want it to play out. I literally do believe that inversion of the yield curve. I think that's more accurate than anything. And I think we're still going to see. I mean, let's be honest. The AIM All Share, FTSE 250 is sold off anyway, but other parts of the market may need to as well. Cool. Thanks for that, Russ. Speak next week.
Have a super weekend.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.